Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
They tried with that social media app called Her that I think failed instantly. I think it was infiltrated by men. I think it's still a thing.
I think it still exists.
Men would ruin it.
I saw that and I was like, there's no way this isn't going to be instantly ruined by men. Like, there's simply no way.
They're just signing up lesbians as women.
Yeah, I think that's
just
what
starting
it
to have like sexy conversations over text with lesbians.
That's exactly.
And being like, but I'm like posing haven't as you a been lesbian? Curious about what a penis feels like?
Yeah, trying to get the conversation started about like possibly thinking about.
I have
a guy
this
in.
Friend. His name's Ted.
Yeah,
he knows a lot about World of Warcraft. He's kind of like a Renaissance man.
Yeah. I'm dyking out. You're dyking out. Let's dike out together, see what it's all about.
Diking out, diking out, diking out, diking out.
Hi, and welcome to Diking Out, a podcast about talking, laughing, loving, breathing, fighting, fucking, crying, drinking, riding, winning, losing, cheating, kissing, thinking, dreaming. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
And I'm Sarah York, and I did not know that was coming.
And today, we'll be diking out with comedian Gwyneth Fortune Thrift about, you guessed it, the L word. Hi, Gwyneth.
Hello.
Gwyneth is a writer for the Upright Citizens Brigade Mod Night, and she's also the co-creator and one of the writers and performers for UCB's new monthly all politics sketch show, The Swamp, which I really want to see. Mm-hmm. And if that was enough, she's also a filmmaker whose lesbian rom-com short film, Lucy and the Stars, which I watched and it's great, was featured in the Northside Film Festival. Wow. That's a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah. I met Gwyneth in a sketch class at UCB, and she was one of the few funny people in the room. When you're taking those bottom-level classes.
Yeah, oh my God.
But I'll never forget you had that one sketch about... it was just the most relatable sketch about, like, going to a party in the winter and just having to take off layers and layers of clothing. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's funny. That made it on Mod Night eventually.
Did it?
But it turned into two women trying to have sex.
Oh. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, that is sex in the winter.
Yeah.
It was literally, like... Me last night, I had, like, surprise layers on underneath.
Yeah.
I had, like, four shirts on that I had to go through.
Oh, that's great.
So we want to dive into our topic today as soon as possible because there is so much to cover with the L word. This is probably our first but not last episode dedicated to the L word.
Yeah, we need to go quickly because the show becomes less relevant with every passing minute. So.
Well, and they're rebooting it, and once they're rebooting it, we're probably going to have
a recap at the beginning.
Yeah. We're going to have a spinoff called The Farm, but which is really just, I don't know.
That's great.
Inside baseball. But yeah, there's actually, I discovered a podcast dedicated to the show called The L Word Made Me Gay, so that's how much there is to talk about
great.
It. It's just they have an episode.
But there's like a whole, that's how Autostraddle started, right, too? It was like an L Word recap website.
Yeah. Oh, God. I lived for those L Word recaps, but I liked them on After Ellen.
Yeah.
And also the whole social media network called Our Chart that existed for a while.
Is that,
That was a real thing. I'm the only one that knows about this. We've talked. I swear. No, sometimes I think it was a figment of my imagination, but I swear to God, there was
it's the Mandela
social network. Yeah. I didn't just make it up, but I think I might have because that no one knows about it.
Yeah,
it was a social network. Yeah, it was like Facebook for lesbians.
For sure, some computer savvy lesbian made absolutely. It after they
and then
saw
they just
the
took
L-word.
It down yeah. so unceremoniously.
Well, to get us in the mood today, I've replicated what I could of the chart in 2 minutes in the studio.
Oh, yes.
Just so
I just noticed that. That's amazing.
Inspiration. I didn't have much
we
time.
We better
for
remember
it.
To erase that or your or yeah. the people who I share know. The studio are gonna have questions.
Yeah. Or they'll add their names to it. Yeah. Maybe they've also been with Shane. So if you haven't seen the show The L Word before, you don't have to turn this off. You can keep listening. We're going to try to talk about like the bigger themes and issues mm-hmm. within the show, and it should be interesting regardless whether you've seen it or not. Do turn it off if you don't want spoilers, I guess, but...
I think the statute of limitations expires when a show is a decade old.
Yeah, but... and when it's rebooting, but there really aren't... I mean, it's not really spoilers.
Yeah, no.
The show is...
I spoil Game of Thrones after 2 weeks.
The show yeah. spoils so. Itself. The show at spoils itself. At a certain itself. Point, it just comes back yeah. around. Yeah.
But before we get into the L Word, I do want to follow up on something that was discussed on last week's straight women episode. That's what we get for mm-hmm. inviting a straight woman on the show. We become super cis-minded
yeah.
and problematic. One of our awesome listeners, shout out to Sumi, pointed out how problematic one part of our conversation was about Caitlin's experience with virtual reality at Sundance. Of course, we didn't mean to be transphobic, but I definitely see how it came off as mm-hmm. being that way and insensitive. And as a cis woman, I want to own up to the fact that I'm not as thoughtful as I would like to be in terms of trans inclusion.
Yeah.
But it is something that I'm always working on and hoping to be better at. And that's why I appreciate getting called out on my bullshit by anybody.
Same.
Yes. Always feel free. Dykingout@gmail.com. Call us out on our bullshit.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times we're just being silly and making jokes and not really thinking about the weight of our words and the way we talk about things sometimes. So if you're sitting at home in your car or wherever and scratching your head and being like, wait a minute, what did they say? We were talking about a virtual reality experience at Sundance, and it was called Dick Girl, and we didn't realize that that was a slur for trans mm-hmm. women in porn, so you learned something new, and yep. I tried to Google Dick Girl virtual reality, not at work, to... to see maybe, like, was this supposed to be some type of commentary? Mm-hmm. Couldn't really find anything about it. And all that came up were mentions of porn and porn virtual reality.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't know if maybe this was some type of pornographic virtual yeah. reality. But whatever it is, it doesn't really sit right.
Yeah, yeah.
So our reaction to it when we were talking about it was pointing out that if you want to have an experience of being a woman with a dick, you could just put on a strap on. Ha ha. We were laughing and joking. But, you know, the truth is that you can be a woman yeah, with a dick,
absolutely.
Or you could be a dyke with a dick.
Yeah.
And you don't need a strap on. And so yeah. apologies to anybody who felt like we were being insensitive.
We will do better.
We'll do better.
All right.
Oh, there's so much to go into. So our whole lives, we're watching stories of straight people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if there were ever gay or lesbian characters, they were either a prop, most definitely a stereotype. If it was a lesbian, she was probably either a murderer or mm-hmm. she was killed off very soon.
Yeah. Yep. And there certainly weren't any instances that I can remember in my early life of seeing two women interact sexually at all.
Yes. Like, yeah. I was going to say,
all.
It was
not
never sexual. Like, yeah. like even Will and Grace, it was never
yeah.
sexual.
Yeah.
Those characters weren't there to be well-rounded examples of of gay men because mm-mm. if they were, there would have been way more fucking on that show.
Yeah, no kidding.
Been like...
The first time I saw... I recently rewatched the entire series of Will and Grace, within the last couple days I finished it.
Oh, wow.
And the only time I can recall Will's character, just a quick, kiss on the lips, was when with the arc where Bobby Cannavale played his boyfriend forgot his name, Vinny or something. I don't know. But anyway, he was the cop. But they were like, they were together towards the end of the series, and that happened in maybe two scenes. And that was like final season of Will and Grace. Like that wasn't even.
Well, and then they also had that like gay kiss on TV episode that was Will and Jack kind of
kissed, yeah.
But just to make a point.
Yeah, it wasn't like
and
a
it wasn't,
romantic.
It wasn't
kiss.
A romantic
it was
or
a
sexual
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, it was like a comedic like, that was, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that was, and that was like in the early 2000s, like when that show was nearing the end of its first run.
So then the L Word comes and.
The L Word just comes roaring into our lives.
Around the world are freaking out. Like, oh my God. It was so revolutionary and crazy to be able to watch a program and see the kind of love that you experienced represented.
Mm-hmm. Or wanted to experience, which was more accurate to the time in my life when I watched the show.
That's true too. Yeah. That's true too. But you just didn't see those stories anywhere.
Yeah. I remember the first thing I ever saw for the L Word was a promotional, like, not a bus ad, but it was like just a promotional ad that I saw maybe on like a website or a magazine or something. And it was when they would all like pose together naked. Remember that, like,
oh yeah,
that was like the cover, the DVD cover or whatever. But it was that one like promotional shot. And I was like, I didn't realize why at the time, but I incredibly intrigued by that. Yeah. I want to go to there. What is that show? I did not really watch it, though, when it was on, like, currently on TV. I caught up after.
Okay. What about you, Gwen?
Yeah, same. I didn't know it existed when it first came on TV, and then I found it once I, like, came out in college.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like, something that was just like, okay, this is what you need to watch now.
Yeah.
I feel like it – and then I – watched it my senior year of college.
All right.
For the first time.
I watched it when it came out.
In real time.
I went out of my way to make friends with these weird guys – my friend was sleeping with this one guy, and then he had two weird roommates, but they had Showtime.
Yep, there you go.
So I'm like, I'm just gonna hang out with them every Sunday night and watch the
It's
L
also
Word.
Like interesting to think about how TV was at that time, because you had to buy subscriptions to these channels, and then catch it basically when it was on. Whereas now, like, there's just so many more ways to take in, like, media in general. But, yeah, that was, like, you had to either get it on DVD or know someone with Showtime, of all things, which wasn't even, like, one of the relevant movie channels at that time.
No, it was, like, HBO was, like,
plus
just,
HBO.
Yeah. It was, like, below Cinemax as far as, like relevancy at the time.
Yeah, HBO had Sopranos and Sex and the City at the time. Yeah. So that was relevant. But Showtime really didn't have... too much.
Yeah.
And then if you missed it, then you either had to find when Showtime was replaying it or find some type of illegal BitTorrent on the internet to watch it.
One of those one of those things that used to crash your computer like LimeWire style.
And then
into oblivion.
In the later seasons, I was living in Atlanta and my mom lived 40 minutes away from me there, and I would drive to her house and we would watch the L Word together.
Aww.
So my mom only started watching the L Word, like she missed all the beginning seasons and just started watching when it was really going out.
Right. Like around season 5 or 4?
I think it was whatever
startling.
Season.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Yeah.
Maybe it was a little bit earlier because my biggest memory of watching it with my mom was the scene where Carmen pees on Jenny or vice versa. I forgot the way.
Yeah, that's the worst sex scene anyone's ever seen.
Yeah. And then my mom just had this nervous look on her face and I just had to turn to her and be like, we don't do that.
Yeah.
That's not a thing. And she's like, it's okay.
It's okay if you guys pee on each other.
Yeah. I'm like, no,
we don't do that.
Yeah.
So the pilot episode, that episode, I remember really like, it really blew me away in a way, like seeing women on screen together in the moment where, remember when when I think Bet like disrobes and gets in the shower with Tina?
Yeah.
Because aren't they talking about like having a baby
ovulating.
At that point?
Yeah. They're talking about ovulating.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it's
and
like
that
the first
moment,
signs
like,
of the pilot,
what?
I think, is I'm ovulating.
Yeah, I think that.
Just how
I really
you know,
think that's
the
first line. Yeah.
Which God, is probably the only show that talked about ovulation up till that point.
Right. And I remember that moment, I was like, oh my God. Like, I've never seen anything on TV that, like, made me, that was like, that turned me on. I was like, holy shit, this is like, this is what this is what it feels like to be like excited by imagery, and I've never experienced that. And I was like in my early 20s at the time, so.
Which makes it really weird that I watched it with my mom. I was just sitting there being like, "Don't be into this. Don't be into this."
Oh man, of all series that I don't want to watch with my mom, The L Word might be the top.
I'd be like just like looking down into my glass of wine, just like,
oh my god,
taking
that's
bathroom
great.
Breaks during the sex scenes and then watching them later on my own time.
Yeah, and also the pilot it opened with. Because you know, it had like sort of a montage of like the different characters.
Yeah.
And Bette and Tina, their first, I was really obsessed with Bette and Tina when I first watched it. And their first like kind of quick image was them like laying in bed together and they're naked, but they're like facing the bed so you can just see like their exposed backs. And it was like, there was something so sexy about that that I was just like so entranced by. I loved it so much. Now it probably wouldn't do anything for me, but I'm just like, at that time I hadn't even like really, I think I had kissed a woman maybe once at that time when I watched it, but I knew that like, okay, this is comfortable. This is what's familiar to me. So,
yeah, totally.
I don't know.
Well, it's wild that, like, I just rewatched the whole thing. And even now, going back and seeing that stuff, like, there's not a lot of it on TV. So, seeing it again and seeing this stuff, like, Bette and Tina, I was like, this is still so great.
Yeah. It's still great. I think that
it still doesn't exist. So, then, like, going back and it's just all, like, the first episode is, like, all two women having sex with each other.
Yeah.
The first episode had a lot of sex into it, and then to a point where like some seasons there were less sex and then people were complaining that there wasn't enough sex in the L Word anymore. Like finally we want to exploit we want more gratuitous sex scenes.
In the first episode, what was the actual sex scene? Was that between
I think it's Shane.
It's Shane in the pool with the stranger.
That's
while Jenny watches.
Oh my god.
So, well, first, let's back up to the theme song.
Oh, yeah.
Just hit on that very quick because, so I started rewatching just to prepare for this episode, and I forgot that season one had a different theme song.
It's, like, pleasant.
And for some reason, I thought, like, oh, Netflix didn't get the rights or didn't want to pay Betty for that shitty-ass song, so they just made this, like, quick thing. And then when I watched a season two episode and then the theme song came out, I was like, no, now
the
I remember.
The theme song was so bad.
That it's
it,
so
like,
bad.
Yeah, it just hijacked the show. That used to be this simple, like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah,
like,
that's all
they digital. That's all needed. L Word. Done.
Yeah,
we get
it. Yeah,
it
10-second
song. Instead we get this horrific, like, who? It's Betty, right?
Betty.
Oh, yeah. That theme song is so awful.
It was so bad.
It was really jarring, like, to your senses. I remember trying to fast forward through it when I watched, because I watched on, like, I watched the DVDs.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a remote for my DVD player, so I'd have to get up, physically get out of my bed, go press the button, and try to get through the theme song, and I would always end up, like, having to go back and forth or whatever, but, it was so awful.
Netflix now has that thing where you can hit skip
intro. Oh, the
intro.
Skip intro.
But it doesn't exist
had to be
on
created
the L Word.
It doesn't,
what?
Yeah, no, it doesn't
the
exist on the L Word.
I was going to say, did they create that because some lesbian that works there was like, okay, guys, we need a feature to get through theme songs because of one show in particular.
I'm pretty sure when they had to, like, pay for the rights of it, Betty was like, you can use the song, but you can't allow the skip feature.
Don't let these bitches skip through it.
Well, it's also, it shows up constantly. It's like the only song the show has the rights to.
Yes.
Because whatever the mood is, they play a version of that song. There's
some
like
version.
A break
it down.
Yeah, there's like a slow piano version. There's like
a
breakbeat version.
Yeah. So I was also going to mention
so
in season two, the first time that Shane and Carmen have sex, it's Carmen talking about her like goals as a DJ. And she's like, listen to this.
I'm like already.
She's like, listen to this. In 5 years, this is where I want to be. And then she turns on like a mixed version of that song.
Yeah,
I'm like, what? That's the worst goal, Carmen?
Yeah, Carmen,
it's
you can
a
do
jungle
better.
Mix of the Betty song.
Yeah.
And then Shane's just like, oh, cool. Okay.
Shane's on board.
Yeah. She's like, let's turn this off and have sex.
Yeah.
It's just like crying.
Yeah. Oh my god, that's so funny. Yeah, so Shane, the woman that she fucks in a pool in the pilot, which like for the record would not be enjoyable, I don't think, because like I don't think pool sex is like
No, what water isn't a good lubricant.
It's not. No,
and
it's the worst.
There are multiple
pool
sex scenes. Helena and pregnant
Tina.
Yes,
I remember that one.
Yeah, where Tina's boobs look gigantic under the water the way they shoot it. Not only are they huge because she's pregnant.
I want to go back and find out who the filmmakers.
They also light
the
heck out of that pool. So she looks
Yeah. And then also, well, the first time I watch it, I'm just like, I can't wait for that kid to get older and know that his mom's on his or her mom is on camera just like fucking in a pool with this pregnant belly that this baby's in. It's like, mom.
Oh my God, I know. And the woman, so in the pilot, the woman that she was like fucking in the pool, is she the one that then got mad at her at the party later?
I think
the blonde
she's the
one
that goes like a little
she like approaches her and does and one like, of those like, why haven't you called me things like, to Shane? And that
was
the writer's
She gets, like, billboards put up that say, like, ignore Shane or something like that.
She gets billboard. That was, like, the pre-social media way of her, like, trying to troll Shane.
Yeah, this should have been our first indicator that this show was only going to disappoint.
Insanely rich people.
Yeah.
Billboard money.
Yeah, billboards, like, those are thousands in L.A. Like, $20,000
Yeah, they're like, Sunset Boulevard billboard.
Yeah, right?
Like, prime rip foundation. Down that Coca-Cola ad. I'm here with my money, too.
I'm mad at this girl I slept with.
Yeah, she's handing out, she's literally handing out flyers and people are taking them.
Yeah, people like, are like, oh, like, she's like in a grocery store parking lot or something. She's like a strip mall parking lot just handing out flyers. And people don't think it's weird.
Honey, look at this flyer I got at the Ralph's today. Yeah.
But it lasted four. It lasted four episodes. That was a four episode.
That was an arc.
Yeah.
Who? Oh my God. Yeah. Like Oh my God. I love it so much. And that was the writer's way of like really cementing who Shane was to us, because they're like, listen, Shane's a playboy.
Yeah.
She is gonna fuck everyone and never call again. And that literally just turned into like her entire archetype for the whole show.
Yeah.
I mean, but I felt like you got that the first episode. There was no reason to draw that out and involve billboards.
No. They could have established that in like a tight scene.
Well, they also could have just had her sleep with like multiple women.
Yeah. Like, I would have rather saw that than.
This girl
who looked like the lead singer of Dixie Chicks. I remember thinking I remember actually like wondering if that was her. Because she comes into like the part, that house party that, was the house party?
Bette and Tina
threw a party, didn't they?
House party to find sperm.
Oh yeah.
Let's just stop.
But that's Alice's idea.
Is Alice's idea. But let's pause here and say, if you're not a lesbian watching this show, because if you're a lesbian, you can watch and be like, this is all ridiculous. But if you're a straight person watching, you're like, oh my gosh.
If you're a straight person watching, first of all, good for you for watching this show.
I know. My mom, Dottie, sitting there like, oh my God. I bet, like, is Carolyn going to buy a billboard next time?
Yeah.
She needs sperm and then have like a rager at her
parties where she entraps men and then corners them to ask about sperm? Is she having unprotected sex with strange men she just met to steal their sperm?
Yeah, the Bette and Tina sperm stealing like quest that they were on, that whole B story was like so
wild.
So wild. And like, you look back and you're like, these men have a right to be offended.
Yeah,
like, why are they acting like they were so let down when the guy was like, you lesbians just want my sperm. I think that was the exact line he said, something like they Bette and Tina like got this guy to have like a threesome with them,
but they're just trying to steal his sperm.
Yeah, because like the plan was Tina was gonna go down and bet while the guy like fucked her, and he goes to put a condom on, and they say no.
Yeah,
and then he goes, he goes, you dykes are all the same. You always want, like, as if that happens
like
to
that,
a lot.
Yeah, this guy, this guy.
You dykes are all
lot
the same.
Of, like, weird.
Like, that one guy is like, he seems too familiar. He like caught on right away.
Yeah, this
like really, does this happen a lot to you? You gotta stop going to lesbian house parties, man.
But I think there's a lot of stuff in the show like that's supposed to be played for comedy, but they don't play it for comedy.
No, it's
so then
not
you're just
funny.
Like,
it's
what
like
are these people doing?
It's like a bunch of drama writers who are like, no, we could do comedy too.
Yeah, we got
We're gonna
this.
Cross
gonna
over
have,
with this show.
They're gonna have a threesome.
They're gonna love
and
it.
Trick them.
Yeah.
The classic.
Classic move. Classic comedy trope. Oh my God, the sperm stealing thing was so hilarious. Because even now, when I think, this is how much the L word, like, in a short, even though I only watched the first three seasons, has permanently etched itself in my brain. Because even now, when I think about, like, the future, you know, my girlfriend and I talk about having kids, you know, and, like, kind of how that's going to happen. And I always think of that scene from I don't say anything like out loud to her, but I'm like, well, is this, there's this terrible scene in the show.
Where you should pitch it.
Yeah, yeah, I gotta pitch it and see if it works. I'm like, listen, this may or may not work, but we should throw a party.
Yeah.
It's so bad. That's like one of the more, I don't know, that's one of the elements of that show that I'm like, God, if straight people watched this and thought that this is how it goes, I don't know, our stock would plummet.
Right. So when I was in college, I took a women studies class. Surprise.
Shocker. Yeah.
If anybody's surprised by that. But actually, it is surprising. I only took one. I wish I majored in women's studies. That class is awesome.
They didn't offer those in my small Midwestern conservative college.
Well, our final paper, we had to watch a show with a female lead and then make some type of thesis about it and write this long paper. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I picked the L word.
Duh.
Yeah.
And my whole thesis was the L word is a great show for women, but a terrible show for lesbians.
Okay.
Meaning that the way that it portrays lesbians is terrible. It's just like lesbians are cheating all the time. Every single one of them pretty much cheats, except for I think Alice is the only person who never cheats at any point. And then
I'm trying to think.
She does.
I don't.
Maybe not.
What about?
Because doesn't she go on that weird break with
Dana?
No,
Tasha?
No, Tasha, and sleeps with Poppy. Or is that before Tasha?
But are they on a break?
Maybe. I don't know.
We were on a break. Yeah, no, that's right. They wrote them as these like philandering, like kind of like men in women's bodies.
They wrote it like any other soap opera.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're true. Like, I guess that's where the intrigue is. Like nobody would watch if it was just like, look at these four well-adjusted couples.
Yeah, if it was like just them. Honestly, if it was just Bette and Tina talking about ovulating, I would also probably be like, I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it really was.
I just like walk to my kitchen and do this myself.
It was about sensationalizing lesbians, but it had like enough truth in it that we could all like relate to some parts of it and see ourselves in it and have it be more of a reflection of what we experience than all of the heteronormative stuff we've seen.
Right. Yeah.
But there are so many ridiculous elements that, yes, they're always cheating. They're tricking men for their sperm.
I guess is the thing. I don't know.
They're like super transphobic.
Like literally tricking them. Like they did everything short of like slipping him a roofie.
Yeah.
It was like, it was that bad.
They're super transphobic. They're not inclusive to butch women.
That's the thing that I think holds up the least. It was like kind of interesting when I was rewatching it that it felt like a time capsule of how like even like gender was thought of in like 2003 and even in like the lesbian queer community.
I mean, even in the first episode when Alice is briefly bisexual.
Yeah, and, did that just go away after a while?
Yes. It went away after season one.
It goes away except for like once every four episodes, someone will make some like salacious joke about her being a bisexual.
About her being bisexual.
Jesus.
But in the
present, she's dated men for friends in years.
Dana's like, when are you going to decide between pussy and dick?
Oh, like, Dana, shut up.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but this show, like I mentioned.
Nobody talks like that.
It's the first time that we have a show about like ovulating or that tackles breast cancer in a way that's like not a two episode thing that tackles careers and women and their careers, women, friendships, you know, that don't revolve around what guys they're fucking.
Yeah.
Like that women who are there who are very supportive for each other, who are there when their lives are falling apart and, you know, when Bette cheats on Tina the first time, she can break into Alice's house and just sit there in the dark and Alice doesn't freak out.
Yeah.
But
that arc like ruined my life when I was watching it. I was so mad that Bette did that.
But they do tackle issues of race and of just so many things that you never saw on TV before that I think were so refreshing. Mm-hmm. And for a woman to be able to watch something that's like, oh, look at all these
like, look at all these things. Confident
women who have careers, who have dreams, who have goals that exist outside of just wanting to be a wife and have babies.
Or that, you know, you can want to be a wife and have babies if that, even if that doesn't include men. Like, that's that was powerful too. It's like watching Bette and Tina in their, you know, their drama aside, but like their whole thing of wanting to build a family without, you know, men beyond just the simple logistical part of the sperm. But
the scene when Bette and Tina first bring their baby home and all of the like main cast in the show are there and they all just like take turns holding the baby and like nice music plays, I was like, I just want to watch this on loop for the rest of my life.
That so was awesome. Good. It's really good.
And it's like, it was cool to see it was like just women and they were all like, they seemed like genuinely friends.
Yeah.
And like sharing this like really sweet moment. That moment like redeemed so much nonsense that happened in the show up to that point. I was like, okay, this is like legitimately very good.
And, that's the thing. The show had such, it showed us that it was capable of having great writing and then would just throw the baby out the bathwater.
That's what disappointed you about the
fact
that
the baby quickly disappeared.
You never saw the baby again. Like other soap operas where like the next season in a soap opera, like someone has a baby and then the following season, the baby's like 14 years old.
Yeah, sure.
But like that's what kind of kills me about how like hilariously bad the show is. It's like, you know, these people were capable of putting together these really wonderful nice stories. And then it's like 80% just awful tropes.
It has some very funny moments and cool, you know, moments where the gang gets together, like when they were trying to find out if the chef, the sous chef is gay.
Oh, I love that.
That's one of the best scenes. Yeah. But that is a thing that, you know, a lot of times you're like, you're asking your friends, like, do you think this person's gay? And it's like, all right, let's all check her out next time. Like,
I mean, I've some been time would have been saved because, like, she's a chef, so yeah, she's gay. Like, duh. I've literally never met a straight woman chef. So. And I work in the restaurant industry, and I meet a lot of people. Like, they're all homos. I can tell you that right now. What about
Rachel Ray? Really?
Oh, she's an exception. Actually, the ones that are like the TV ones that have like their own line of pots and pans. They're definitely
Barefoot Contessa, right?
Yeah,
please. Come.
Definitely Kim Burrell. If there's any mystery around that one,
I mean, obviously Barefoot Contessa, like that marriage is just an arrangement.
It has
to
be.
They're just pals.
I assume
they just seem like good buds.
Yeah,
yeah.
He likes his food, and
he's fine. He just seems like the hapless guy. Like, nope, I don't know. She's off with her friends again, but I have this like beautiful butternut squash casserole at home. So going back to what you said about the way that like butch women either didn't appear at all in the show or were like, we basically only had Shane was like supposed to be
but
she wasn't even androgynous really. Would you consider her androgynous by like today's standards?
Not by today's. That's like one of the things going back that just like doesn't hold up.
Yeah.
And even at some points I was like, it feels weird that everyone in this show is like a very beautiful woman and I almost feel like outside the definition of lesbian that this show creates.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it creates an image, I think, that was probably not relevant at that time, even. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were the age I'm at now, during that time, I wonder if I would have had, like, disagreements with the visual, like, the aesthetic of the show as far as the characters.
Yeah.
But it is set in L.A.
True.
So when I had friends, gay friends who moved out to L.A., and I would joke and be like, oh, is it just like the L word? They're like, actually, it is. All the lesbians, most of the lesbians are femme. And I mean, I know lesbians out in L.A. now who are either trans or androgynous or...
yeah, I mean, there's,
you know, but
there's a lot more
across
now.
The spectrum, but that kind of West Hollywood scene at the time was a lot of femme lesbians. And when I watched the show, when I rewatch it, one of the things I'm like, give these women sandwiches. They are all
so skinny.
Too skinny, except for Tina and Bette are the only ones who seem like they get the right amount of calories.
Like,
but Dana is like very underfed for a tennis star.
For a supposedly professional athlete, she was like extremely skinny.
But then I'm like, wait a minute, it's L.A. Like a lot of people in LA.
Shane was like emaciated, but that's also like, I think Kate Monig's like just her body type, but it's still like that character was Oh God, Shane's character. What do you guys like hope to see with the reboot, like with the reboot or remake or whatever it is you call it? Like, what has to be different now in order for it to be like taken seriously?
I think just like different actual kinds of lesbians.
Like not an ensemble of just like lipstick lesbians or like soft feminine women.
Yeah, not playing into stereotypes, having different kinds of lesbians.
Yeah, and not all like cisgender, mostly white in the show, right? Well, they kind of got
I mean, it's mostly white,
Yeah, especially the early seasons.
The early seasons, and then like Carmen comes, and then they finally get some.
Yeah, I just Carmen hope comes, that they have some,
they have like, Kit. Which is a whole nother like, boondoggle of like what the fuck is going on.
Because they just gave her like the worst storylines.
They gave Kit the most like uncomfortable storylines. The first episode, they have her being pulled over by the LAPD and she bribes them. She's bribing. Yeah. I'm like, this is insanity.
This is not,
a black woman would never try to bribe the LAPD to get out.
That doesn't work for any, like, I can't even, oh my God, that was the worst. Yeah, like, I would hope with a new, like, reappearance of this show that they include a much broader spectrum of LGBT people. And that's going to start, though, with getting writers in the room that reflect that.
Oh, for sure.
And I just I have no faith that this show is going to have that.
Well, they're getting the showrunner.
Yeah, the thing that did make me be like, okay, is that Eileen Chaykin said that she was not going to be the showrunner.
Oh, really?
Because she like acknowledged how transphobic and somewhat problematic the original is.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah. I mean, that's the only way that that's going to happen is if they the writer's room is like
a cross-section of people. The queer community.
I don't know. I haven't heard anything about, like, a release date or anything of you.
They don't have the date yet, but Kate and three of the actresses are executive producers on it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
So they're going to bring that to it, and I'm pretty sure that Jenny's going to be on it still, which I'm looking forward to.
Wait,
back from the dead.
I was going to say, how does that work?
I guarantee their official statement is they're like, the sixth season is not canon anymore.
Okay. Yeah.
They're ignoring that it happened.
They're just like going to write it off.
Bette and Tita always had the railing on there.
I mean, that's what they have to do with Roseanne.
Oh, yeah. Where they go back and they're like, just it's fine. Just write through it. Like, they'll never. Accept it. They'll see what's going on early.
So in episode one, she's like, I didn't actually die. And they like actually acknowledge it with some. It's off to the races. Show's already crazy.
I don't know.
God, that's so Jenny.
I don't think it's beyond Jenny, though, to have faked her death.
Oh, no. That actually would... I think that would be perfect with her character. I think that's very much on brand.
What happened? Didn't she have that weird assistant? Well, you didn't watch this
part. I didn't watch anything past three.
Adele?
Adele, yeah. Creepy assistant.
Did anything happen to her? Like, could she have died? And then people just thought it was Jenny?
Because Adele was trying to Jenny's body in the show?
Yeah.
They pulled her out of the pool.
Yeah, she jumps into Bette and Tina's pool, and they pull out of the pool.
Yeah.
But it's like back to the first episode where she watched two women fuck in that pool.
And then it's never acknowledged like how she died or who did it.
Okay. They never figured it out. Oh, the whole like who killed Jenny thing was like the
never resolved. I think maybe there were apparently if you go deep into the like show lore and all of the interviews, like post show, someone says something, but
well, it was supposed to. Well, at least Alice was going to take the fall for it because the spinoff was going to be called The Farm, and it was going to be Alice. Alice serving time, really? And it would have just been a way worse Orange is the New Black.
I was going to say.
So I'm glad it never got made because then Genji would have never been able to sell through. And they'd be like, no, it's going to be like this disaster like, over here in the farm.
Yeah, that would have ruined it for everyone.
Yeah.
Because that would have been terrible.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Jenny was, I remember being more annoyed by Jenny from the first frame that she was in than any other character in any show I've ever watched. Like, I really disliked her.
Watch it again.
I know. I need to watch it again.
Well, watch it through, because in the later seasons, so if you're listening, you've probably already turned off if you haven't watched the L1, to be honest, because it's just too hard not to talk inside baseball with this. But, Jenny starts and another thing about this show is that the characters change so radically in a way that a properly written character should not, or like more than any human would probably change. But Jenny comes from the Midwest. She wants to be a writer, and she's moving in with her boyfriend, Tim, who lives in this big house in West Hollywood, even though he's an assistant swim coach
for high school.
Yeah. And somehow he can afford it, and then the guest house is turned into a studio / fuck shack for Jenny. But by the end of the series, she's having, a movie made based on her semi-autobiographical book that she writes, but she's this completely manipulative, self-absorbed psycho, and maybe Hollywood does that to some people.
Yeah.
So that part, I guess, isn't too crazy, but
because like she shows up to LA like this like mousy Midwestern woman, and she is gonna live with this boyfriend who's like just so oblivious to they didn't sell me as a couple.
No,
I was like, these two do not belong together, and I knew that like 2 seconds
that
into
first
their
scene they fuck was just like really weird. I don't know. I guess I don't like know how straight
was,
sex
like, so
is supposed
sweet.
To look when it's good, but it didn't look like good sex to me.
No, not at all.
They did make sense as a couple, and like they probably were like, we're the two good-looking people in our town.
Yeah.
And then I get to LA, and she's and like within 1 hour, she's having sex with a woman being in LA.
She literally was kind of like, she plane lands in LA. She drops off her shit at her boyfriend's house. They have weird straight sex, and then like later that day, she's like leering at, she's like spying on
the neighbors. And then that night she goes to the house party,
the baby daddy house party,
and then makes out with Marina.
And then has sex with Marina.
Like, she's been in LA for 12 hours at this point, and she's already like in a room with Marina at a house party thrown by these two lesbians who were trolling for sperm. But
yeah,
Or maybe that was a different house party. I don't know.
It makes sense that a lot of people hate Jenny so much because that's the character that Eileen Shaken said is like most like her. And I hate Eileen Shaken. And I'm like, oh, no wonder that Jenny is just seems like this total manifestation of narcissism.
Yeah.
And that we're supposed to be watching her whenever she writes, she has these artsy cutaway visions that are just horrible to get through. Yeah. And
oh my God.
Don't carnival anything. Yeah.
I just remember watching it and also thinking like, just like logistically their relationship, how she moves. First of all, like you mentioned before, that house he lives in is ridiculously unrealistic for what he probably makes as an assistant high school swim coach, because he lives next door to Bette and Tina, who are like wildly successful.
But that's like any show on TV, like Friends or Seinfeld. But then I remember like
just thinking, Jenny's so annoying because she's not even like contributing to the household at all. She does get that little job. Doesn't she have a job at like a grocery store or
something? She's a cashier and then she's a waitress.
She can't hold a job.
She works at the Planet for a while.
And I'm just thinking like, what does this guy see in her? Like she sucks. She's like the worst girlfriend. He's bending over backwards to give her this studio and stuff. And she makes like
$10
an hour. Yeah, I know. It was just so funny. Like, I just felt like she was so like not into him from like the second she got to L.A., that I just kind of, I felt bad for him in a way. I was like, oh, this poor guy. This is probably not an unfamiliar narrative for a lot of people.
For poor Tim.
Yeah, poor Tim.
So speaking of characters that have total changes from start to finish, there's a character, Helena Peabody.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Who's introduced season two and comes in as this rich heiress.
Yeah.
And she has all this money and she's very confident and she's supposed to kind of be this alternative choice to Bette for Tina.
Mm-hmm.
So here's this other strong woman who wears fancy clothing and doesn't take no for an answer and whatever. By the end of the show, she is this kind of like clumsy, super insecure at one point, pseudo sex slave to some woman with a gambling problem. Yeah.
Wow, and I've got to catch up.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, all of her edge is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Totally gone. And she's just, like, just this very sad, sad person.
Who does she end up with? Like, what happens with Tina's, like, arc? Who does she ultimately end up with? I mean, I know this is kind of a spoiler, but whatever. The show's 10 years old. You can watch it. Anyone still listening
Tina
by now
Bette
has watched it.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I didn't know that. Helena, so they do end up together.
Yeah, Helena starts flying off the rails when she falls for a straight documentary filmmaker.
Dylan.
Yeah.
Dylan a woman or a man?
Dylan's a woman.
Okay.
Yeah, and then Dylan, like, does something totally awful to her. I think she, like, sues Helena for sexual harassment.
Yes.
Oh, man.
And then leaves for, like, 3 episodes and then comes back and it's like, forgive me, Helena. And Helena's like, sure.
Yeah.
The threshold for forgiveness in these people is also doesn't hold up.
No.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, and then just, like, from there, it's like she goes through, like, a fever dream of storylines.
It's really, the gambling sex slave one was my favorite.
Peak Helena.
I could not believe that whole section of the show where she was just, like, flying around. Because she goes, is that before or after she goes to jail?
Oh, I forgot she was in jail.
Yeah, she goes to jail for a while.
Helena does?
Helena does. Yeah.
Oh, man. I can't wait to rewatch this. I'm going to do it.
Do it.
Her stuff, like, turns the corner where you're like, this is not good. And then it comes back and you're like, this is a blast.
Yeah.
What is this woman doing?
They just did not know what to do. They brought her in. They probably just meant to bring her in for one season, but they're like, oh, she's pretty good looking, so we'll keep her around.
She has, like, an accent.
And has an accent. Yeah.
She was Australian or something? Or what was
British.
Her? British. What was your favorite, like, what was your favorite, like, sex scene pairing? As far as, like, people who...
Oh, always, like, Tina and Bette.
Yeah, right?
Oh, that I was say mine too. Alice and Dana.
That was the most fun.
Alice and Dana, I think, are the only two that have legitimate chemistry on the show.
I think you're
right. Even more so than
Bette
and Tina.
Yeah.
Like, they have scenes where they seem like they're just talking to each other.
Yeah.
Where they're, like, in, like, gross pajamas, like, chatting. And I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one, that bummed me out when they broke up. Like, that was, like... That was kind of sad.
Yeah.
Alice was like, I get what her purpose was, like the comic relief, but then she kind of, to me, she sort of developed into like a better character over time, I guess. I didn't watch until...
A better character, like when she carried around like a cardboard cutout of her ex-girlfriend.
Oh, God, never mind. I forgot about that.
Again, making lesbians seem like they're
a breakup meltdown.
Yeah, like we can't handle breakups.
They come out of that and she just like...
I wonder if people think that when lesbians break up, we do ridiculous things like that involve going to like a FedEx Kinko's and getting things made or like calling an advertising agency.
She goes to the dump to find that thing again, too. She does.
Never mind. Damn it. I thought they were going to like... I completely forgot about that. And I just felt like Alice was like a pretty... Generally a consistent, well-written character.
No.
Not at all. Is there a well-written character in the show?
Bet is the only consistent character who... Only goes off the rails, I think, at the end of season one when she has sex with Candace and it makes no sense.
Candace was the woman that was in her office.
It's the carpenter
who has to wear overalls.
The hunky carpenter that Bette can't resist.
Bette can't resist this like rough around the edges. Like,
that was the least chemistry.
Carpenter.
Least chemistry.
That was the dumbest
between
thing.
Two people. That and was the really fact forced. That Yeah, I mean, I could see maybe Bette being like really self-absorbed and having an affair, but not that way and not with that person.
With Bette, it would in reality it would be more like someone that she works with that she's like slowly developed this like thing over time, or someone who matched her type a little. I don't know. Like I felt like that was so forced.
Is she the one that almost
type.
Sleeps with the senator? Because that made more sense to me. Maybe it was. Tina?
Does that happen?
There's an episode where Bette is like trying to get like any. Oh, the other funny thing about rewatching it now is they all complain about George Bush.
Ladies.
Like, oh, Alice, you get ready.
Your problems are just beginning.
So she like goes to Congress to testify for some like budget cuts they're trying to make to NEA grants or something.
Okay.
And then goes over to a senator's house that she has previously told Tina she thinks is gay. And then like the second the door closes, the senator's like, I want you.
Yeah.
and Bette like resists. But that, because it seemed like much more of like a power dynamic thing that made sense for Bette's character.
Yeah, like that's why that's kind of what I meant. Like she
when Bette hooked up with her research assistant or whatever.
Yes. Wait, what season was that? I don't think I saw that. I'm still thinking of the Carpenter.
Because
the Carpenter thing was a long-term thing, right?
Kind of like a multiple. Yeah, there were a few episodes on that, but that ended episode one of season two when Bette has a very short tryst with her her research assistant or whatever, or teacher's assistant. Mm-hmm. That one made sense because it was, you know, somebody that treated Bette like a god and looked up to her.
Yeah, her ego needs to be fed.
Yeah. It was kind of more of a ego feed and like this is someone that Bette can easily control.
Yeah.
And the power dynamics were more of what Bette goes for. So that made sense.
Was she the one that Tina saw her like touching her hand or something?
That's a carpenter.
Oh, because the carpenter was invited to
season
the party.
One. Yeah.
I was like... No, the carpenter, because the carpenter
installed
like for free or something. She got,
She's
like, I'll do this for no money, install Provocations, Bette's
big art show.
So when they're at the gallery opening, they're like touching each other and Tina catches them. Because she's there like, with her hammer, doing last minute touch-ups.
So that, I guess while we're talking about, the carpenter, this leads to another thing that definitely doesn't hold up, and that I read a little bit about when Tina confronts Bette at the end of season one and says, I saw you.
Mm-hmm.
They have a very rapey
love scene.
I forgot about it.
Horrible.
It's gut-wrenching where Bette rips the dress off Tina and forces her hand when Tina's physically fighting her off, just like hitting her and stuff. But then at some point, Tina just kind of gives in and takes Bette's hand and shoves it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an uncomfortable
shoves
scene.
It into her. And I read an interview with Tina where it was on After Ellen, and they kind of called her out and said, you know, a lot of people thought that was rape.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she was like, no, if you watch the scene, you'll see that, like, they were both, like, Bette was just desperate to, like, connect to Tina, and Tina wanted to, like, exert her last bit of whatever. And I'm like, no.
No, it seemed pretty rapey.
Yeah. You don't shove your hand into a woman who's physically pushing you away. Yeah. I don't care how long you've been together or what you've been through. That's never okay, and that it was never addressed. And that made me feel very weird that I've always been so pro Bette and Tina, and I totally forgot about that scene. I know. And I'm like, oh man, because Gwenna, did you watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
No, I've never seen it.
Oh man. Well,
I haven't either.
On an island over here, but yeah. In Buffy, a lot of people are Team Angel or Team Spike, and Spike tries to force himself on Buffy at one point, and she stops him, and he's kind of getting carried away and thinking like, oh no, you want this, you want this. And then she's like, no, seriously, like, get off me. And then people are like, how could you be Team Spike? He tried to rape Buffy. I'm like, this Bette Tina thing is way worse than whatever Spike did. Because Spike backed off once he realized that Buffy, like, really was not down for it, where Bette, like, actually stuck her hand.
But yeah, that was bad. But that's another thing, too. It's like, with this remake, there's such a wealth of topics that they can explore in, like, the whole world of, like, LGBT, you know, everything. And I just hope, like, I have so many doubts about it, but I think that now is, like, I know. I should write a spec script or something. I don't know. I think that this is, that could be something that they can sort of, like, rectify with a reboot. Like, some of the ways they dealt with sex and, in this case, consent. Yeah.
Well, another one. So right after that, the first episode, I think, of season two, when Tim moves away, and it's this weird scene. When I start describing it, you'll remember, where Jenny's asleep, and then Tim just goes into the guest house and takes his clothes off and stands over her naked and is like, Jenny. And then she wakes up and sees him, and she's like, no, Tim, what are you doing? And he's like, come on. She's like, no, I don't want to. And then he gets on top of her and fucks her.
What?
Yeah. And she's saying literally, no, I don't want to do this. This doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And he fucks her anyway for literally 2 seconds and then gets up and walks out. And then she's like, don't leave. But then, like, as soon as he starts fucking her, then Jenny seems, like, kind of into it.
Right.
And I'm like, you know.
That pushes that really shitty, like, idea
narrative that women saying no really mean yes. Because, and the same thing with the Bette thing, the fact that Tina then eventually is, like, physically making Bette fuck her, then it makes it seem like, oh, Tina really did want it. Which is horrible.
It is so bad.
Why?
So
it's
bad.
So disappointing that a woman run show would do, would portray
that
sex
is the
like
most
that.
Surprising part of that whole thing.
In those cases, it just felt like such a lazy way to deal with, like, anger, too.
Yeah.
But they're like, oh, we don't know. Or I don't know.
We,
like,
can't figure out a way to write
this. They're like, we don't know how to have, like, a genuine fight scene, or even for them to, like, have sex and deal with this if they're not that mad at each other. Mm-hmm. So they, like, had this weird, like, rape scene.
Yeah. I mean, I know of couples who have gone through breakups, and sometimes with all the pain, they'll be like, they really want to have sex with that person again, and almost have, like, angry sex to, like, get out, whatever. But that's always comes after a period of processing. I've never known anybody who, like, in the moment at a time like that where you're fighting, who just goes straight to,
or especially like
fucking, except in, like, Big Little Lies, but again, that's fiction.
But doing a confrontation, especially a confrontation about, I just saw you. I just saw you doing something that proves to me that you're having an affair. That's like, that's not the time where something like that would happen.
Right. And instead of, like, continuing that scene, they were like,
make them angry fuck.
Yeah.
Like,
what? Like, who wrote, what sort of, was this, did you finish writing this, like, right before holiday break or something? And everyone's like,
we
just
have to hit the sex quota. So, like, we're going to do this really strange and terrible. Yeah.
It was problematic, but it was also this weirdly powerful emotional scene. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little bit torn about it, because I'm like, I don't like this, and this is problematic, but it it did make me feel like, oh my God.
Yeah, it did make me feel like the weight of Bette and Tina's relationship being over.
That's what it was.
Because I was like so sad after watching that. And then I was like, oh yeah, these two characters splitting up sucks.
Yeah. It's like all this emotion that was kind of under the surface that hadn't had a chance to come out yet.
Who do you think was the best actor in the show? Like the best performance as far as like literally just good acting from any of the cast?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I really think Bette. I think Jennifer Beals is Bette.
I think Jenny.
I mean, Jenny was... she did nail that part. Let's agree.
I'm also judging like, this I can never
I don't know her real name, but she...
I don't know her name either. Yeah.
I do.
I'm also judging this on how well they were able to like find chemistry with the other women in the show.
Yeah.
Oh, Mia Kirshner.
Mia Kirshner. That's her name. So I guess with Mia Kirshner, it's just I could never see her as anyone other than Jenny.
She'll always be Jenny.
Yeah.
And I think she...
Just like Kate Menig will always be...
Captured Jenny so hard. Yeah.
In the like two things I've seen her in since the L Word, I'm always like, Shane.
Oh, Shane, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I would say better Alice.
Yeah.
While Alice is like silly and sometimes she was like a little over the top, like I always believed her in any of the relationships she was in the show and like she and all of the like friendships she had with the other like women.
She was also the only one that had any comedic chops of the entire cast.
Yeah.
So
I did like that about her.
And she was the only one who was an out lesbian at the time.
Yeah, I think she's an IRL lesbian.
Yeah.
Is she the only one?
Of the main cast.
Yeah. That's also relevant.
Kate Monning.
Kate Monning.
She's not really out. What's her name?
I always forget Alice's real name. This is so bad that I only know them as a character. Anyway.
It is worth noting, though.
Lisa Haley.
Yeah. Leslie Haley.
So this is
Leslie?
Like,
or is it Lisa
I think
Haley?
It's Elisa.
No, I think it's Lisa.
E-L-I-S-A. Lisa? It's not Lisa, is it?
Leisha Haley.
Leisha Haley.
Oh, gosh. I'm going to edit this out or else someone's going to revoke our lesbian cards.
I know. That's the other thing is like in this new show, in the reboot, I hope that it's like actual
lesbian
actresses or trans women actresses or anyone.
I mean,
like,
there's enough.
It has to be.
Like, I mean, I'm sure there were then too.
This is a moment where it's like, okay, you have this opportunity. You have all these characters who need and can be fulfilled by actors who you know reflect the character
don't have to learn how to have sexual chemistry with another woman.
You don't have to make it an
exception in their contract. Like, I guess I'll do this.
Yeah. You
know? That's what happened. Jennifer Beals kind of outed Kate Monning by saying that when she was doing the sex scenes, she would check with some of the cast who was actually gay, like Kate or Leisha, and asked if she was doing okay. And she let that out in an interview when Kate wasn't out yet.
That's remarkable, too. Like, that shows you how much has changed in the, I don't know, 15 years or so since the show, is like outing another actress for a show like The L Word.
Yeah,
like,
for not being like out and being a for not star being out in the, of The
yeah,
L
exactly.
Word.
Yeah, exactly. And just not being out in the beginning anyway. So, yeah.
And I imagine in the reboot, Jennifer Beals will also still have her nipple contract because she's the only one whose nipples are not visible on the show. Huh. Yeah.
Interesting.
All the other main cast, you see their nipples like multiple times, but never
not Beals.
Jennifer. Yeah.
She's like, I got a couple decades of cop shows I'm going to make after this. Yes.
So let's talk about Max, because
I don't have much to say because I don't know much about this character, but go on.
Max comes onto the scene and is riding back with Jenny from her retreat back to the Midwest, and they drive together back to LA, and Max is introduced as Moira, who first is just a butch lesbian and immediately is shunned by all the group of friends. They couldn't be ruder to her.
They're
just so dismissive of her presence.
Yeah, her first scene with a group of friends is like incredible.
Yeah.
Because Max shows up and like tries to connect with Shane. Uh-huh. Being like, well, the butch is here. And Shane's just like, fuck off.
Shane's not having it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're so hostile. And then they, I mean, part of it is because Max, Moira at the time, was working class or something. Shane's a fucking hairdresser. Yeah. Like, don't
be judgy. There can be some classist warfare in this group of friends.
The big delineation by, like, having Max show up in a, like, plaid, flanneliest flannel you could find.
Yes. Yeah.
That's, like, the sleeves he cut off himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then when Max...
I'm starting to remember this. So
Max starts to transition, and the more masculine that he gets, the more that Jenny is not into him anymore.
Okay.
So now it's this weird rejection of Max's transition.
Yeah.
And then the more masculine he gets, he has mood swings. I don't know. It's just like they don't know what to do with this character. Yeah. And
because I highly doubt they consulted anyone who's actually gone through that process.
Yeah.
And done any research on it to know.
I mean, a testament to the
time that there wasn't enough information out accessible to people for that. But still.
One important thing they hit on is how tough it is for trans people in the workplace. But they did it in a weird way. It was when Max is Moira. He interviewed at this tech firm, and then they didn't want this butch lesbian working there, so Moira didn't get the job. But then as Max, he gets the job because they don't realize that he's trans. But then once he's trans, then everybody becomes super hostile, and then he has to quit and I think like work for Alice at some point.
Yeah, and it's like wild because they find out the chart because in this like sitcom-y like plot arc, the boss is like, Max, why don't you date my daughter?
And
he's like, what am I gonna do?
Oh my god.
And then Max like comes out to the daughter as trans, and then it all like spirals
and then it
out
all
of
crumbles
control
from there.
Yeah, but it's just like, oh my lord.
Yikes.
The worst thing
like,
I remember.
Could we have found a different way to write I don't know. That just seems so.
It was just like as soon as it seemed like such a strange, like, yeah, it was very sitcom-y. And as soon as the boss was like, my daughter's good looking, huh? I was like, oh boy. Like, we all know exactly where this is going.
Yeah.
So what happens with Max then, like, long term?
So, just you wait. Max, Max wants to get top surgery. Mm-hmm. And then is it Jenny or Alice who is super terrible about it?
I think both of them.
They're like, are you really sure? Because this is a very serious, irreversible decision.
It's also not irreversible.
Right?
Right? Is it not?
I mean, you can't get your...
If it's just top surgery,
original
you,
boobs back.
Not, I mean, not the original one, but you could get boobs.
Probably.
I don't know.
I have no idea.
That seems weird. That's a weird thing for them to say.
Well, the whole thing is that they're trying to make him feel bad. He's been on testosterone.
They're shaming him for continuing this process.
Yeah, he's taking testosterone, and that's a step that a lot of trans men take.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be something that you're like, oh, are you sure? Like, don't you want to keep this part of your...
Like, no, that's the point of this.
Identity of a woman? No, yeah. And then he doesn't go through with it, and he seems miserable about the fact that he's not going through with
really?
It. And then he's very depressed and self-hating. And then, so at one point he starts sleeping with Beth's girlfriend's interpreter.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So then he gets like a boyfriend. Oh, I just remembered how his storyline is.
Yeah.
Yeah. He gets like a boyfriend, and he gets...
Okay.
Max gets pregnant.
Yeah.
Which, again, maybe... speaking as a cis woman, but from the trans friends I have and what I know, that when you're trans, usually you don't feel a connection to your former sex organs.
Yeah.
So usually trans men aren't looking to have vaginal sex.
Also, in this case, it sounds like the writers are doing as much soap opera-y, wild Grey's Anatomy twists and turns that they can.
Yeah.
And that's what they came up with.
Well, but if Max is doing testosterone.
Trying to engage with, like, oh, how can we engage with gender and these storylines? And then just, like, did the crazy thing. Instead of
what's the wildest thing that could happen in this scenario? And they're all, like, in a room.
Because
like,
it was around the time
like,
of
well,
the...
Yeah. This, you know.
It was around the time of the pregnant man yes. being in the news. I forget his name. But he stopped, the real life pregnant man stopped taking testosterone months before trying to get pregnant because you can't get pregnant when you're taking testosterone. And Max on the show never indicates that he stops taking testosterone.
Also, a big plot line for Max is that he takes too much testosterone.
Yeah, that he takes too much.
They have an episode about how he's like completely overdone it. So they didn't even ask like a doctor if this is possible.
Like they didn't even like. It sounds like the writers didn't do any research whatsoever.
Any due diligence, and then they just make Max pregnant, and then Max has to.
Yeah, they're just trying to do gender, but like saucy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
don't do it well.
Yeah.
We don't have to do anything well, guys. Let's just make it crazy.
Yeah.
No real thought to what Max's relationship with his body, mm-hmm. like what that would be and what would sex be like for Max.
Yeah.
Because you also don't see any sex scenes with Max once he transitions.
Yeah.
I think in with the boyfriend, I don't think.
Not that I remember. Yeah. But those are the seasons I've seen a lot. Okay, I've rewatched the first season a couple times, and then the later ones I just haven't gotten.
Yeah.
Haven't revisited. There are some fun things about the later ones. Jenny hates Tina, and I think that's the funniest thing.
Why does she
Jenny's
hate Tina?
Jenny's hatred of Tina.
I think Jenny...
I mean, a lot of people hate Tina, but why does Jenny hate Tina?
I think Jenny thinks Tina's trying to like sabotage her film or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she thinks that Tina just becomes the enemy for Jenny, who's a crazy person and needs an antagonist, and she decides it's Tina. So she just really leans into hating.
Yeah.
Just leans into hating Tina.
Yeah.
And it's probably the funniest thing. And then also when Alice and Jenny fight, it's so funny, and it's so well done and hilarious. And
does Alice ever hook up again with anyone in the group? Like,
no,
she never repeats a Dana situation.
No,
or is her?
Was Poppy ever really in the group?
Pop, yeah. There's a woman that shows up and sleeps with everyone in the group.
Oh, that's Poppy.
And that's Poppy. Yeah,
of course, her name's Poppy.
Poppy's like this character that shows up, and she has like a mythology around her that she's like a magic sex god.
Oh my god. What does she look like? What's her aesthetic?
But then they do these great things where they're like, she'll have sex in her limo, and it's like long shots of the limo, and you can see it bouncing up and down.
God, imagine being on the set of this show
and
being there for those little last minute decisions. They're like, all right, we got to bounce the car.
Yeah.
Poppy's
we're not selling this enough.
Remember those intimate, beautiful sex scenes from the first season? Now we're bouncing the limo.
That sounds like it could be a trope for like a figure of speech for when a show really, instead of jumps the shark, like, oh, now that show really bounced the limo on that one. Yeah. That's what I'm going to say instead of jumps the shark from now on.
Didn't at one point she challenge Shane to like a duel via basketball game?
Hates, Poppy hates Shane because she's like the main
competition. Shane doesn't care.
So Poppy's trying to move in on like Shane's, but Shane's territory wasn't her friends. Like those are her friends, right?
But I guess... Poppy,
but there's still jealousy happening because they're both.
Well, it was just one side.
Was Poppy androgynous?
With the chart, and the only other big hub on the chart was Shane. So she was like, "I must crush her."
So as a grown adult, she looks at that thing written on a board and is like, "I need to dominate this."
Yeah.
So Poppy,
this is real. The stakes are real.
Yeah.
I believe she's Puerto Rican. She has like the tight braids, cornrows, and wears like.
Wait, her name is Poppy, as in like P-A-P-I?
Yeah, P-A-P-I.
Like, I Poppy.
Oh, man.
And it's like a big thing Alice finds her on the chart and is like, how is this lesbian that has like a bigger hub than Shane and I've never met her? So there's like a whole episode where she goes like on a sleuth to find this person. And then like, I think it's supposed to be a misdirect where you think it's a guy and then it's like this hot woman and she's like, Poppy?
How do you explain the chart to someone who's never seen the L Word? Like it becomes I don't understand. So, cause I only watched the first few seasons and I just thought it was like, something that,
I mean, the chart is this
idea. It's
something
that Alice talks about on a radio show, isn't
it?
Yeah.
Okay. The whole thing of the chart is this idea that in the lesbian community, it's very incestuous because there's only a finite amount of lesbians and,
how are we all connected through relationships?
Everybody's sleeping with everybody because if you live in a city and there's only like 200 lesbians who are on the scene and aren't like serial monogamous, then
so
they're
you get,
all
like your big names on the chart, like your Shanes, who Shanes are and Poppy. Patient zero for the entire lesbian community.
And someone named Lauren that they never point out in the picture of the chart. There's like there's Shane, and then there's a big Lauren, and then we never meet Lauren.
Lauren's probably the Billboard girl.
Did Billboard girl ever have a name?
Or I don't
was she
know.
Just,
probably
like, crazy Billboard girl. That's no, and she, then she just kind of disappeared. Like
yeah,
she just
wasn't. Well, Shane had sex with her again. As like, stop baking these billboards, and I'll have sex with you. And then they did.
Because
and then she's like, where are you going, Shane? And Shane's like, remember the deal? And she's like, oh, okay.
That's how it works.
That's literally the episode.
That should be like the tagline for the show. The L word. That's how it works. Trust us. This is real.
Yeah.
I know we're like getting a little shorter on time, but we would be doing a disservice to our listeners if we did not talk about the reality series that spun from the show called The Real L Word.
Oh.
Which I never watched. I never watched it closely, but
I recently
about a year ago, I saw one of the women from that show at a restaurant. She was the one who was like a main fixture of the show, kind of like androgynous, had like the braids.
Whitney.
Yeah. I saw her at a restaurant with this.
That's
like,
all I know about the real
album. So they're real.
Was the Shane was Whitney.
Yeah. When I visited New York I was like 22. 23 or so, like just having watched the first three seasons of The L Word, they were filming The Real L Word, and I visited New York, and my friend and I went to this like terrible gay bar, and I don't remember what, I have to ask her which one it was. It was one of those big like nights where it was like the lesbian night, and it was just like a warehouse full of people, and they were filming that there, and I remember we couldn't really move because all the cameras had like blocked off this huge part of the area.
Yeah.
And everyone, it was like the hot topic of the whole thing. It's like, oh my God, they're filming The Real L Word. And I was like, I remember thinking even then, I was like, this is literally the worst thing. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen is this reality show.
I tried watching an episode or two and I remember I just turned it off at one point because I don't know. I mean, one, like I know how reality TV works and how contrived it is.
Yeah.
And there was this one scene where they were like having strap-on sex. And I'm like, this is porn. If this is reality TV and she's fucking this other girl right now with a strap-on, I'm literally watching porn and they're exploiting these people.
Showtime? Yeah, it was, it was like, it ran for a few seasons.
Oh, so it wasn't like Mosaic. This was like
a logo? Was it a logo?
I think it might have been logo. Because wasn't it like, it was like 2009,
it was right
10,
after the L Word ended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just like, it was, it
or
looked
no,
like it
maybe
was written
it was
by
before
like,
it ended. It was before it the L Word ended. Yeah. Yeah.
But it looked like if you took the L Word and someone thought of like, oh, a reality show, and then they handed it over to people who have produced like Girls Gone Wild. Right. And were like, just give it this treatment. Yeah. It was so stupid.
It was like, and they tried to find characters that kind of mapped onto characters from the show.
Yeah.
But of course, you know.
Remember that when Tila Tequila had that dating show where she was with like men and women? That's like what it felt like.
Yeah. God.
Were they actual lesbians?
They were real lesbians. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But they were just like you just had reality, like she had a reality show written all over it. They were all like aspiring DJs or actors or whatever. Like always DJs.
Not aspiring DJs.
And just, always DJs. Yeah.
Just remixing Betty.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And like, this is where I want to be in 5 years. Yeah. Right. I don't know. Final thoughts on.
I look forward to the. I will watch. I'm going to watch the reboot.
Oh, yeah. I'm for sure going to watch.
My expectations are very low. Oh. I will be happy if they do things and if they address issues in the same way that like Orange is the New Black has you know, some better, more representative shows. But I really hope that their writer's room is a diverse group of people, because otherwise this is going to be just as bad as the first one.
Yeah. I would even be okay if it's as crazy as the first one, long as it actually like grapples with some of these like queer topics in an interesting and like smart way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially in issues around like gender or identity and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I think it should kind of keep its craziness, because that's what it was. You have to look at it as a soap opera, and that's half the fun at this point. But be a little bit more tuned in to
you maybe know, consult today's some climate. People who actually who have these lived experiences and like can offer you some insight on like whether or not this is the worst thing you could possibly say.
Yeah, exactly. Giving the same treatment they give like Bette and Tina talking about their jobs and then also what they want out of their relationship to like anything to do with gender.
Yeah, that'll be good, hopefully.
Do you have any other takeaways just from rewatching the whole thing? Like,
I think I said most of my big takeaways, but
I just want to make sure we captured it.
I still
it
think
all.
It was like super fun to watch.
It is
like as crazy as it is. I was like, this is still really good, and I'm glad it exists.
Does it make you immediately aware of how far we've gone, like as far as technology, like our phones and computers? Well,
that's
and
the
stuff.
Other thing is like every episode would be solved with a smartphone.
Yeah,
because half of them, the characters like just can't find each
it's
other.
It's just bad communication
in a lesbian club. Yeah. It's like the central.
Yeah, now
problem.
I'd be like, well, she would just text her, and they're like, oh, okay, well, back to the drawing board.
but even looking back on some of the gender stuff, like, I'm sure it could have been better then, even if it wasn't, but it's, like, nice to see, at least, like, for me it was interesting because I was, like, not totally out then, and then being like, oh, I do think we've come a long way, and I think that hopefully this reboot is going to be a lot more interesting in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still, like, I'm like, oh, I'm glad that there's not a lot of people that treat, like, gender like Alice do in my life.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? What's your biggest takeaway from it?
From rewatching it again is that just embrace Jenny.
Yeah. I'll take your word for that one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm gonna try it again, and I'll report back for sure. Now I'm inspired.
Yeah, no, I think the takeaway the second time around is just you know where the bar is, so it's more enjoyable that your expectations for it being an actual like quality narrative with rich characters that are consistent and that makes sense.
Once you drop that notion.
All that,
you're like, once you're like along for the ride, like, this is great.
Then it's just a fun show full of pretty ladies.
Yeah. Right.
And, one really fucked up thing. Well, there's so many, but, in the scene where they're at the opening of Propagations, Tim brings as his date one of the swimmers on his high school team.
God.
He brings Trish. They go out of their way to make Tim so likable at the beginning of the first season, other than his like weird bad sex with Jenny. But like, and I'm not talking about the rape thing. It just looks just like he's like mowing the lawn or something when he's plowing into her.
Yeah.
But,
I have to wonder if that was if that was intentional or if he just is not a very good actor.
Marina awakens every cell in her body. Yeah. Meanwhile, Tim is just kind of like going like back and forth. Yeah. She's just like laying there like a statue.
Oh,
yeah.
Tim. Tim is just like dealing with all of Jenny's bullshit. Like immediately you can tell Jenny is probably the most difficult person to be in a relationship with.
So
and not only is Tim in a relationship with her, he does it with a smile for the most part and puts up with her canceling plans, having
these weird mood swings,
being super shady, and he deals with it all. But then he shows up at that art gallery with his high school swim team girl, Trish or whatever.
Oh.
And then Jenny's there with another guy, and he just goes to him, did she tell you she's a big dyke yet?
Oh, my God.
Something like that. I'm like, oh, my God, what happened to Tim? Like, even Tim can't be consistent you know? They have to have him be, like, this weird.
If this was real life, Tim by now would be, like, an internet men's rights activist. For sure.
For sure.
Like, he would have, that would have been his path, as he would have evolved to, like, maybe not full Tea Party, but, like, definitely an MRA, like, calling out women for misandry and things like that.
Definitely on Twitter with the Pepe the Frog.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. There's a lot of Tims in this world.
Oh, man. So, we like to end with a random question. I didn't think of one for this week, so it's going to be... this week we're going to have a not so random question since we're talking about the L word and the revival of it, I guess. If you could cross a queer character from any other show universe to be part of the gang, who would you want to see?
I would love I'm only coming up with like Orange Is the New Black is the only thing that's like
I know that's where my mind right went. But the one person I'd want to be on there is dead.
Oh yeah, are you talking about
Pousse?
Yeah, Pousse. That's what I was gonna
yeah.
say.
Yeah, I would.
Pousse would be awesome.
Pousse would be amazing yeah. on the L Word. She would be the best thing yeah. about the L Word.
She would be the best.
I think.
I hope they're. I hope they've approached her about this show. They have to they have about the L Word oh, about yeah. putting her in it. Yeah.
I hope she's the new executive producer. Yeah, I hope Samira Wiley has been tapped.
Yeah. I hope she's like the new Shane.
The new showrunner. Yeah. Cast herself as Shane.
Oh, I hope they give her full creative reign over whatever she wanted to do with the show.
Yeah, her and her wife.
Yeah. From Grey's Anatomy. Probably Sarah Ramirez from Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, you would.
Dr. Kelly Torres. I'm obsessed with her. But you would. Yes. That exact character.
I think Sandra Bullock's character from Miss Congeniality as like a girlfriend for Alice for a while.
Yeah.
Alice is like, I'm dating this great. FBI agent who's in the closet.
Yeah. Who's tough as nails and hilarious. Tough as nails,
yeah. But she loves beauty pageants. Yeah. And I'm obsessed with
they would be the most insufferable couple ever to like hang out with.
Yeah.
That's great.
Man.
I love this.
I mean, I would probably go with I already said Pousse, but someone that's not dead, I guess, is Emily from Pretty Little Liars, because murderers follow her around, and I think that would make
that would really add to some intrigue in the new one.
Yeah, then we could cross-reveal that Emily really is A, and then A killed Jenny, and then just have a whole pretty, and you guys are looking at me like you don't know what I'm talking about.
I watched the first, like, two seasons of that.
And you stop?
And I stop. There's just so much of it. It only gets bad at
season four goes off the rails.
All right. I'll take your word for it. Just like everyone takes my word for the fact that our chart was a real social network that I was very much entrenched in for like a year. Anyway.
Gwenna, where can people find your comedy and watch you?
You can find me on Mod Night every first Monday of the month at UCB.
Yay.
On Twitter at Gwenna FT. And the Swamp. It's up monthly, but you should check the calendar because it's not regular.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
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 I'll definitely check that out. And if you haven't left us a review on iTunes yet, I know we have a lot of new listeners now, and take the time to rate us and review us so more new listeners can find us. Follow us on Instagram, follow us on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter at TGI Carolyn.
You can follow me at The Sarah York.
And we have some exciting announcements that are coming up soon. We'll get into that the next episode, but cool things are happening with Diking Out. And
go watch The L Word.
Go watch The L Word.
It's all on Netflix.
Yeah.
And
enjoy that theme song.
Oh, yeah.
Enjoy the theme song. Dike out with us next week.
Yes.
Thanks. Bye.
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 Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.